Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Would you believe it? Here on Wednesday, WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Would you believe it? Such an interesting expression. Would you believe it? Usually comes when a piece of something is shown to you or some information comes your way and it doesn't fit in with your belief system. We call that cognitive dissonance. Get that word, cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. Say it again and again because you're going to be using it a lot in your future when we get through today's program. Cognitive dissonance. There's a man I know who told a story. And he told a story. He came to me. He had this symptom. The symptom was snow falling in front of his eyes. He had these white dots always in front of his eyes, and all the doctors told him it was hysterical. Hysterical means they think it's caused by some psychological thing. It's going to be tough to believe, but this really happened. He came in, and we went to explore what his life like was as a child. And he said as a kid, he remembered the day his father left. And I thought that would be a tragic moment, but there was no snow in front of his eyes back in those days, no white things falling. Talked about it, cried about it. But he talked about a time he went to a ski lodge with his mother. And at this ski lodge, the mother was very impressed by the ski instructor who was paying attention to her. He, at age 9 or 10, caught that attention. He saw what was going on, and he said to his mother, probably because he was a little jealous and not wanting to share his daddy's spot too fast, said to his mother, I want to go out and play in the snow. I want to go out and play outside. She, not wanting to leave the ski instructor, said, you don't want to go outside. It's too cold. Now, he was caught here with a conundrum. It's called a double bind. In a double bind, you're being told something that's not true, but you're not allowed to expose the truth, even to yourself. So he looked outside, and what was he going to do? I mean, is mommy lying to him? It seems to be not so cold. If mommy's lying to him about this, is she lying about everything else? Like, where did daddy really go? Or does she love me? So to protect himself, he started to see snow falling outside. And he literally saw snow. And he saw it was too cold. And he remembers telling his mommy, yes, it is too cold. I won't go outside. He broke down in tears during the session about this, what he had to do to keep her because he was so scared. And I know it's going to be hard to believe at the end of that session he didn't see snow anymore. That's how powerful this stuff is. Cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance, when two pieces of information come into our mind, one of them say one thing and the other says another, and you just don't know how to put it together. A child is drawing on a wall with some crayons. Mom walks in and says, hey, look at what you've done. You've made me sick. Because he messed up the wall. You've given me a headache. Cognitive dissonance. Here it is. I'm a child. I'm drawing on a wall. I have the power to give mommy headaches. This doesn't make sense. The child has to do something with his mind in order for it to make sense. He tries to erase it. He gets a piece of paper and starts smearing the crayons on the wall. He's 3 years old. He doesn't want to get his mommy to have a headache. She comes out of the room and sees it and says, now look at what you've done. You've only made it worse. And she goes back inside. So the child says to himself the following. He has to renegotiate with his brain. See, it doesn't make sense. You draw with a crayon and you give your mother a headache. But he does see how upset she is, so he must have given her the headache. So he swears he will never draw on a wall again. Number one, because he knows the following is true. If you do something damaging, you can never undo it. So for the rest of his life, he became a pacifist in every way possible. So the whole idea of having a mind that receives one bit of information and not another. Just imagine this. Imagine that you had lightning strike out of nowhere. Did you ever get that shock feeling? Oop. Kind of an awesome feeling. What's that? Right? Well, that's kind of a seedbed for cognitive dissonance. But remember, cognitive dissonance is when your mind sees something and your head can't wrap your head around it. And we have a lot of different ways of dealing with it because we don't want to be in that state of mind. It's a suspension of reality. In fact, I think the expression to diss somebody, a common hip expression, means really to, in a way, cause a cognitive dissonance, to make them to do something not believable to them. I look at people and I wonder about cruelties. And I was reading an article in the New York Times recently about the origins of evil, a book, The Origin of Evil, where they talked about some atrocities that have been done around the world. I can't even repeat the slightest, the least of them I can't repeat. One wonders, when you're committing an atrocity, the cognitive dissonance between your empathy and your cruelty. How do you do it? How can you be so cruel? As an example, I believe it was in Sweden, of a man who had a daughter. And I'm sure many of you remember, he kept his daughter in the basement. His wife was upstairs, he kept his daughter in the basement, where he repeatedly had sex with his daughter, and she had a number of children. And that he kept going around the community saying, "My daughter's missing, my daughter's missing." But he and his wife had taken these children in, the daughter's children in, to live with them. Now, wow, you know what I mean? But you see, that's what happens to people. They go crazy. And what goes crazy is when you no longer have to match reality with whatever the stimulus is. You don't have to put it together. See, now it doesn't have to make sense. Psychotic psychosis, you know, where you say to yourself, paranoid psychotic, you know, everybody in the world wants to hurt me. And everywhere you look, there's evidence that people are smiling or something else. But it doesn't have to make sense anymore. Once you've flipped out, once you've gone over the edge, you can make your own sense and you can keep cognitive dissonance harmonious because it's the way it is. That's the way you do it. You go crazy. Many of us go crazy, and many neuroses comes as a result of just this. We can't put the materials together. We don't want to believe our parents were selfish and careless. So we make them nice. We get in relationships with people who brutalize us in many ways. And we make up excuses. Oh, they were sick. They didn't know what they were doing. I'm trying my best. It's really me. You do any number of things to get away from the reality. There's a part of what we love about cognitive dissonance is we love it. We love the moment of it. A good card trick. When somebody does a good trick and they do a trick on you, a magic trick, and you're stuck at that moment. That can't be. How did that lion get into that cage where that woman was just sitting there a second ago? How did that happen? And you don't even ask how it happened. The real beauty is when you feel the magic. And the magic is a suspension of your mind. That's a cognitively dissonant state of mind that's enjoyable. thrill rides. See, even horror movies, they're this kind of suspension of your belief system. I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, I'm going down the roller coaster, I'm going down the roller coaster, you know? Sometimes we want that to happen because it stimulates a number of things. Now, we did find that there are chemical reactions that go along with cognitive dissonance that are fine. A lot of hormonal things happen to us, as well as the anterior cingulate gyrate lights up like crazy part of your brain, which is a part that excites other parts of the neurotransmitters, and it kind of works in many ways. But basically what you have to do is recognize when stuff doesn't match. A good example is a very old story about the wolf. Was it the wolf? The fox. The crazy fox. Was that an Aesop's fable or was that? The fox wants the grapes. He reaches for the grapes. He thinks he wants the grapes. He wants the grapes. He jumps for the grapes. He thought he could reach for those grapes. Then after a while, he says to himself, I don't want those grapes. They're sour. And he goes away. Sour grapes. He goes away because he didn't want them after all. So one of the ways that you deal with cognitive dissonance is you go after something. And when you go after it and it's not available and you find that you can't get it, even though you were convinced you could get it, is you make believe it wasn't so good after all. Another thing that happens to people involving cognitive dissonance is when you hurt somebody inadvertently. You know, let's say you're working in one of those New Jersey offices where they have, you know, no offices, but just these little cubicles. And when you're in the cubicle and you're standing up and you say on the phone, and you say something bad about somebody else in the company, and somebody else hears you and they repeat it. You say something about the clothing of another person, right? And and again, it comes back to you with a shock. Oh, my God. One of the ways that we deal with cognitive dissonance when we hurt somebody is we make it true. We then go to make it true. So even if you bumped into somebody on the street and they fell down, you would say, well, that person was walking too fast. See, you make it true that the reason you punish them, that's another reaction to cognitive dissonance. It just seems we don't like it. We don't like our brain to be dissonic. You know, we don't want it to be not making sense. How about you? You ever find experiences like that? A more recent one happened with the end of the world. The prophecy of doom. An increasing belief which followed this prophecy. Now, believers met at a predetermined time and place, believing they alone may survive the earth's destruction or would be taken into the cradle of heaven. The appointed time came and went, and now what did they do? Imagine you're standing there and you're saying, this is it. This is it. I think this is almost it. This is it. Oh, I think this is it. No. Well, maybe this is it. And after a while, you say, this isn't it. And you go, wait, what do you do with your mind at that point? Well, as you saw, it's not yet. I reread the book. See, the book has an ink stain on it over the number. It was over the 10, and I thought it was an 18, and it really was a 10, and it was because of this ink stain. So now we're going to have to go back for 2 years, and it'll happen 2 years from now because I misinterpreted the book, Cognitive Dissonance. They say responding counterattitudinally activates the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex and the anterior insular cortex. Now, there's a very interesting thing about this activation of these two parts of the brain. It correlates with hoarding. Now, how can cognitive dissonance correlate with hoarding? Well, okay, let's think about it. Cognitive dissonance. I have a piece of material. I should get rid of it. No, I won't get rid of it. I may need it. so I'll save it. Right? That's curing the cognitive dissonance. The dissonance is you really don't need it. You may never need it. Get rid of it. Throw it away. So if you were to take the brain and look in the brain of somebody who has cognitive dissonance, you will see a high activity in the very same part of the brain that has high activity among hoarders. I think that's fascinating. I think that's terrific information. I think that's leading us on a path somewhere. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You know anything about love? You think falling in love is cognitive dissonance? It just may be. Think of a moment when you saw somebody for the first time or kissed them for the first time and you felt a whoosh come over your body. And you said, uh-oh, what's this? Nothing you expected to happen. It was just going to be a light kiss or a little look in their face and none of this stuff was supposed to happen. Your mind is in one place and your body goes in another. How do you deal with it? Well, you could either succumb to it and say, this is really wonderful, I just felt in love. Or you could tell your mother about it, and she says, yeah, like last week, right? Or you could rationalize it to yourself. You could ignore information that you see, like, and he happened to have a wedding band on. But he told me it was just his old wedding band from his old marriage that he hasn't been able to get off because it's a little too tight because he gained weight recently. You see, you can do anything you want to deal with your cognitive dissonance. But people try to deal with it. They want to bring their contradicting thoughts into consciousness. How many times has that happened to you? You listen to somebody who's your hero. You listen to a hero. You vote for a hero. You vote for somebody to become an officer in the government, to become a major person. And then you elect this person, and then that person shows to you over and over again that they weren't who you thought. So you rationalize it. You say, well, at least he dances good. You know, and you rationalize it. Well, at least he's better than the other guy. And you rationalize it, and you rationalize it, and you do a number of things like that. Somebody once said, man is not rational. He rationalizes. That's kind of what we do to make sense out of things. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. I want to hear from you around this issue of cognitive dissonance. Buyer's remorse. You know, buyer's remorse, you go out and you buy something. In a state of dissonance, people, you may feel surprised. You sometimes your experience clashes with your expectation. So you buy something like a car. At first, it doesn't work. You feel surprise, then dread, then guilt, anger, embarrassment. People are biased to think of their choices as correct despite any contrary evidence. This bias gives dissonance theory its predictive power, shedding light on otherwise puzzling, irrational, and destructive behaviors. How could people do that? And then they'll stick to the, I always love Ford Prius. You know, I always love Mercedes-Benz. Even though they may have had a hard time with it, they will shift their minds to believe. So in love, we have a tremendous feeling of suspension in our mind, and that's what happens. Now, here is a trick. I'll teach you a trick. Everybody get ready for this trick. I hope you should not do this trick if you are under 60 years of age, I don't know, I have to have another requirement here. You can't do the, anybody could do this trick. Okay? If your mother doesn't know about it, you shouldn't do this trick. Here's a trick. I went to a guru once, and I watched him as when he spoke to me, he rubbed his fingers together and smoke came out of his fingers. Smoke, and then he blew the smoke on my head. And he said this would cure me of all my ills. It had a funny smell. So I said to myself, boy, that guy's amazing. He's got smoke coming out of his fingers. He has an open aura. I can even smell ozone. What a great thing. Well, here's what really happened. And here's how you could do it if you want to do a trick. So I'm going to teach you a trick. The trick has to do with matchbooks. You know, matchbooks, matches. If you get a matchbook, paper matchbook is preferred. On the very front of the paper matchbook is a striker. The striker is this black thing. It has in it a number of things. It has glass. It has some charcoal, I think. And it has some form of phosphorus that's supposed to be benign. All crushed up in the striker, okay? That's the striker part. And then the matches. The matches are phosphorus, and they have bleached wood or paper, whatever they're on, and they're on one end. And you take the match and you strike it on the striker, and supposedly you light the match unless the striker is wet. Then you can't do it. But here's the trick, the guru trick. You peel the striker off the matchbook. You peel it off. Now, you'll see the very little black thing. It's on about one layer of paper. And then underneath that is four or five layers of paper. So now you peel this off, and you have this thing that's about an inch and a half long, and it's black, and you peeled it off. Then you get a pot, stainless steel pot. Hopefully you could do this with porcelain also. You turn the pot upside down. Do you have any idea what I'm about to say? I want you to know this is a trick, but it's an important trick. Now, you take the piece of a striker, and you'll see it's kind of curling up. So it curls up, and you put it on the bottom of the frying pan or pot, whatever you're doing, upside down stainless steel, and you light it. Now, you light it, it gives off a funny kind of smoke. It gives off a little smelly smoke, maybe white, a puff, something like that. But you don't interrupt it, and you let the ash form, and you'll see on the bottom of the pot, there's a greasy residue. Something has hit the bottom of the pot, and it's like a greasy, oily oil on the bottom, just very little. It may even have some smoke in it. It may have a little black in it. And then what you do is you take your fingers one at a time, and you slightly scoop up on one hand a little of that greasy oil. Now, first you scoop it up on each finger, first your forefinger, then your thumb, then your middle finger, then your other finger, then your pinky finger. Why is that always called the other finger? Okay, now you've got these on your fingers. Now you could wait an hour. It doesn't matter. Just make sure your fingers don't touch. Then you go in front of somebody and you rub your thumb against your forefinger. And if you rub your thumb against your forefinger, two things are going to happen. Something's going to get activated and smoke is going to come out of your fingers. Yes, smoke comes out with the smell. What a smell. That also comes with it, which has a, it smells a little foul, but it's not so bad. It's formaldehyde urea, by the way, what it is. As terrible as that smells. But it does smell strange, and that comes along with the smoke coming out of your finger. So if somebody does that in front of you, you're going to believe this person is a messenger of God. And then that same person can do it with every one of their fingers. You know, you just rub each finger one at a time. If they rub all their fingers at once, you get a whole bunch of smoke coming out. So this is what I learned had been done to me. Now, why? Why did they want to create cognitive dissonance in me? Because when you create cognitive dissonance in a human being, that's when you could do the greatest hypnotic suggestion. You see, people at the point of cognitive dissonance are suggestible. And anything you tell them, anything you say to them at that moment, slips through the normal gates of the protections of the mind and goes into the unconscious. Those are parlor tricks. They're tricks that magicians know. They're tricks that evil people know. We know how to get it. If we make a loud noise, for example, a really loud noise, that moment that you have of cognitive dissonance is a time when people could slide in, you know, those are the bad guys. And they associate loud noise with bad guys. And it goes all the way in. So this is the number of times this has been done, all based on what one theory, this one theory of cognitive dissonance. There's a lot more to learn about it. You could look it up. You can see there's ways of dealing with it in the future. There's ways of handling it in the past. There's a different hypothesis of reducing dissonance, how we like it, how we don't like it. But it is fascinating stuff. And you've all had experiences with it. And I'd like you to call in with those experiences, because after the break, we'll come back to you and we'll take some of your information, some of what you have to say about it. It's 212-209-2900 is our number here, 212-209-2900. So the idea is to recognize cognitive dissonance when it happens. And there is a simple way out of it before it causes any damage. And the simple way out of it is to pause and to decide. See? Pause, observe, decide. And that's all it takes. So if you hear lightning, instead of jumping, you pause, you wonder where it's from, and you make a decision. But if you're frail, if you're already on edge, if you're already living a world where cognitive dissonance is everything, where nothing makes sense to you, you don't have many choices. It seems simple for somebody like me to come along and say, pause, observe, and decide. Well, when you're so fired up, you just can't do it. And I understand completely. But even if he can't, you'll know that it may take a couple of breaths for you to be able to get control of yourself. So when the time comes, you can finally make a decision in a single direction and not react out of panic. And also don't tend to glorify something just because it doesn't fit in with what you have to say or do. You know, when things don't feel right and they don't feel like they fit in with your belief system, you change your perceptions. But the worst perception anybody ever has is when they decide that their parents are cruel. Nobody wants to decide that. So they want to get out of it. So they either glorify their parent or they vilify the parent to a fault. When you finally see that cruelty is a part of them, and you allow yourself to see that, you become much more at peace. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, some lovely music, and I will continue this discussion. Please place your calls, 212-209-2900. I'll be right back. Hoffman. So daring. Tango Mezzeroni. Something like that. I think it's Turkish. Medzina apostrophe agu r o d n apostrophe agu y. Tango from the album Lumiere, Lumier. Just because I thought you might want that. Bob Brosman, daring man. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, 212-209-2900. Just one more thing about other phenomena related to cognitive dissonance. That's what we were talking about if you just tuned in for the music. This is a science show. It's a psychology show. It's a love show. It's a program dedicated to making you feel a little better about your day-to-day existence by giving you some understanding. A little understanding about the way people are, the way you react. So here's a phenomenon related to cognitive dissonance theory, effort justification. We're working for something causes you to like it more. And for this, I give you Subhunt, or I give you any of the video games, or the games that people play on their phones, that just playing it makes you like it more. There's a post-decision dissonance, where one justifies an unalterable decision as the right one. We only have one choice. Even though it doesn't feel it's not the right choice, you can justify it as the right choice. There's also the over-justification effect, when an intrinsic motivation is shifted to an extrinsic motivation through external rewards. And there's self-handicapping, avoiding effort in the hopes of keeping potential failure from hurting self-esteem. So you avoid because you don't want that cognitive dissonance. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I love the topic that you have today, Dr. DeMille. I think it's very relevant to anyone who's ever been a child or anyone who tries to work with child as a children, as a parent, or a teacher or caretaker. And when I was 7, I made a vow to myself that I would never do to my own child, should I have one, when I grew up, what my mother had done to me. And my mother was a great person. Overall, she was a great parent, but there were, you know, incidents that were abusive, and I took those to heart. I've also worked with a little girl whose mother is a doctorate degree psychologist, and whose own experience was extremely physically abusive with her own mother, and who's very proud that she doesn't abuse her own children, but her own children do receive some mild physical and psychological abuse from their mother, and
you know, it's nothing.
Oppressed by it.
Sometimes having a parent,
to be free of it, and
can you hear me?
Kids, to
can you hear me speaking?
Be very articulate verbally, and to be very.
No wonder she can hear me.
Initiating and self-assertive in their dialogue with people and questioning things and asking for reasons. But then when they direct those skills towards her...
Excuse me a moment. Can you hear me speaking?
She's open about her own family.
I don't think you can hear me speaking.
So I love this woman. She's a wonderful person. She's so gracious, and she's really great with other adults. And she loves her children dearly, but I really see this cognitive dissonance as a key to what I have perceived as her, you know, amazing ability to be in denial about things that seem obvious to an onlooker. And I myself have had issues with hoarding and procrastination. I'm a very passive person. And so I find this topic really interesting, and I'm wondering, my question is, what are some basic things that we can do to try to peel back some of these layers, both in ourselves and in communicating with with other people that we feel have this problem.
Thank you for calling in. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I could hear you faintly before.
Oh, you can only hear me faintly before.
On the phone. I heard you fine on the radio. But now I hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay. Strange. You know, one of the things you were saying about psychologists, even though they swear, many of them, that they'll never beat their children, they have a way of beating their children that is sometimes more harmful than a whack on the butt. Because we have a way of invading their minds. You see, we have a way of getting into their minds and going to places that other people can't. We psychologize them. We rape their brains. And that very often I have found is more damaging. In fact, there's a very high incidence of suicide among children of people in the mental health profession. So that's just to go along with what you have to say. On the other side, you know, it's a funny thing. I was talking to you while you were talking, and you're saying you're a hoarder, and in a way I couldn't get through to talk to you, which is part of what hoarding is about. People can't get through to you, right?
Right.
Because
they feel that they can't, yeah.
Yeah, because they can't, because there's no matter what anybody says to you about all that material that you have sitting around there, you're not going to get rid of it because you believe they don't know what they're talking about.
Yes and no. I've gradually gotten rid of dumpsters full of things, and I still have a little bit left to go. I'm almost there.
Do you have any animals?
Not right now, but I grew up with pets, and I had pets in my early adulthood.
When you had a pet, did you hoard?
No.
No. Don't listen to me. Get a pet.
Okay.
Get a pet. Not a cat. In fact, get a dog. Do you like dogs?
I love dogs, yeah.
What kind of dog would you get?
I would probably get a German Shepherd.
A nice big dog.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect dog. Get a dog. Get a huggable dog. Get a dog that you could wrap your arms around and play with. You know, don't get a little dog. Don't get a dog that doesn't like to be hugged.
I don't like little dogs.
What?
I don't like little dogs. I can tell.
No, I can see why. So that's why I'm suggesting to you something. You know, even a golden hair retriever, something like that. Something that you would do, that you would have in your house, that would be living, that you would be touching, that you would be feeling, and who will help you get rid of. You'll find yourself shedding. This is for you. This is not a prescription for all people. This is my hearing your voice and my moving to your cognitive dissonance with a suggestion.
I've listened to you for long enough. I'm a recent transplant from Chicago, but I have listened to you for long enough to understand that you do have a lifetime of experience that you can bring to bear in individual situations. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So give some love to an animal.
Yeah, and I get a lot back.
And you'll get a lot back. Maybe even go to a shelter and find one. You know, that would be really wonderful. Go save a guy or a gal somewhere.
But my other question is, I want so much to, you know, I feel like I have this insight to offer to this family, and I don't want to do more harm than good by, you know, charging in and just, like, saying, oh, I think you have this problem, why don't you do this? What kind of advice can you give me on how to work with both the child and the mother in this situation?
Bring your dog over. Bring your dog over, have the kid play with the dog. You know, what you got to do is bring a different form of love in the room.
I get that. I have to disabuse myself of the notion that I can solve the problem.
It's nothing to solve. Just show them what love is about. You've got plenty of it. What's your name, by the way?
Susan.
Susan, I thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Dr. DeMille.
Sure.
God bless you.
You know, Ben Franklin is when someone does a favor for a person they dislike. Hear the dissonance between those negative feelings for the other person and the awareness of having expended effort to help them. Several experiments have been using this, but they named it the Ben Franklin effect. Because Ben Franklin, when he served in the Pennsylvania legislature in the 18th century, he dealt with the animosity of a rival legislator. And the way he dealt with it was he gave the other guy a task to do for him. And the guy who did the task, who kept him doing the task, eventually turned around and favored Ben Franklin. And they call it the Ben Franklin effect because it was the very act of doing this task that helped the guy turn his feelings. Another way we deal with cognitive dissonance. Imagine when you're working at a job and you're having to do something for a boss you don't like doing. Or worse than that, you're with a husband and he doesn't want to pick his clothing up off the floor. What do you do? How do you deal with it? You say to yourself, I love him anyway. And then when you pick up the clothes off the floor, you actually find yourself loving the guy more. Or vice versa. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Becky.
Hello, Becky.
Hi. I have lived with a person, my father, I almost said husband, wow. My father was very, a very bad person, and my mother was, she facilitated this. So I grew up in a household where I was always off balance. And as an adult, I've gone to therapy, and I'm doing a lot of work. However, I'm at a point now in the therapy where I actually had forgotten about sexual abuse. It had been pushed down, and it's just come up in the last 3 months. And I talked to my sister, and she remembers it, too. We both had pushed it down. But now we're at a point that all the anger is coming up, and my mother has passed, but my father is still alive, and I do not talk to him. But I'm having problems in my own relationship and then therefore with my children because I'll see my husband loving my children nicely, and he would never do what my father did to us. But I'm at a point now, how do I get through this? I know you said stop and make a decision.
No, this is not that kind of thing.
Okay.
You see, what's happened is the feelings have emerged from childhood, and they've just manifested for the first time.
Yes.
So the person who is angry at your father is not you angry at your father now. It's the child you angry at your father then.
Thanks.
So what therapy has to do, if it's really succinct, and if it's a good therapy, and the therapist knows how to do it,
mm-hmm.
is the therapist knows how to guide you back to the younger you dealing with the younger him.
Right.
And expressing all of the feelings that you have, the feelings of fear, betrayal, disgust, anger, all the stuff that you had, to go through it in a therapeutic session with a therapist present. Now, mm-hmm. that takes a very skilled therapist, because therapists are not that skilled. They just, they make believe they are. They listen to you. They, you know, they pat you on the head, but they don't have, but if you have a really good one, they help you map this out and go through it. And then when you go through it, you will find you don't have the same conflict about your husband.
Okay, and my kids, because I'm seeing that. Not that I'm envious of them, but it's almost like I look at them and I can see the little girl in me being taken advantage of by her father. And it's I'm not really jealous, but yet maybe there is some jealousy.
Have you spoken to your husband about this?
Yes.
And what does he say?
Oh, he's very supportive. I go to therapy once a week, and he's really supportive of that. And I don't tell him details. It's too painful for me to even talk about, let alone somebody who's never been in the situation of growing up like I did, hear the details. But he does hear how I'm in a lot of pain right now.
Well, you
and
see,
how I
there's
need to
a problem with that. There's a problem with that because, in a way, what you're going to do is have your husband afraid of his daughters. And we don't want him to be afraid of his daughters. Mm. We have enough reactions from women who I know whose fathers were afraid of sexualizing them. Mm. I mean, it's only weird men who sexualize their daughters. It's not
right.
Regular guys. And your husband's not one of those guys. No. But what your husband's going to wind up doing out of loving you is he's going to get punchy. And he's not going to want to go near the girls. He's not going to want to touch them. He's not going to
want
to hug them.
That's not what I want for them. I want them to have a healthy relationship.
I know you don't want that.
Okay.
But it becomes very difficult because he is trying to be cautious.
Okay.
So I suggest get your therapist to work harder, because you shouldn't have had to ask me the question. Your therapist should have had an answer for you. Or find another therapist, you know?
Yep.
And don't leave it on your husband to service this fear.
You're so great. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Taking your calls, talking about cognitive dissonance. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
I have a question. I think it's cognitive dissonance. When you get out of a relationship and you look back on it with rose-colored glasses, even though another part of you knows that it was really toxic and not that great.
That's exactly it. That's just what you're talking about. You get out of a relationship.
How do you resolve that?
Well, you don't, you know, there are men I know, let me try it another way, there are men I know whose mothers were miserable. Then the mother dies, and they make the mother into a saint. You know, now the wives of these men say, but you hated your mother. And they say, don't you talk bad about my mother. Because the mind wants to make harmony out of it. You see, now, I'm going to ask you something. Are you somebody in life who generally has been very good at helping people find peace with each other? Are you a kind of a person who helps people calm down when they get very excited?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely, right? You're used to putting out fires.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
You don't like anger, do you?
Not too much. I mean, sometimes it's better than, like, a depression, but, yeah,
it's the choice. It's exactly that choice, anger or depression. So with your ex, you're either going to be angry, depressed, or you're going to glorify her. You see, you're going to do one or the other. And the problem...
Yeah, and it actually feels better to be angry, because she's got a lot to me
that's
almost unforgivable.
See, that's it. So the idea is you'd rather not... But rather than get angry, you'd rather stay really strongly attached.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens so often to so many people because they don't want to get angry because the anger is so representational of all the anger that they've been trying to suppress for all the years over everywhere. But you've been in therapy. You know about depression. I could tell. Yeah, I could tell. You got quite a bit on it. So what the mind will do is it will obsess. And believe it or not, rather than make that final departure, when people are depressed, they put them on SSRIs because there's something about the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the pills, the depression pills, that actually ends the obsession. You know, I don't like it, of course. I'd rather a person works through it. But it gets to a point where the thing just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling and you can't get rid of it. So they wind up taking medication for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it. You've got a good mind and you've got a good heart.
I'm at the precipice now where, you know, I get out of it for a few weeks, but then, you know, you get sucked back into it, something reminds you, and then it's like, oh, this was so great.
Do you have a dog?
In reality, it wasn't.
Do you have a dog?
I have a bird who's making a lot of noise in the background now.
You have a bird, right? What kind of a bird is it?
It's just a parakeet who I actually inherited in the breakup. So
oh, really?
It reminds me of her a little bit.
So how did I smell this one? Isn't there anybody in the world who would enjoy this parakeet more?
Yeah, it's good because I take care of her and, you know.
I understand. Isn't there anybody in the world who would enjoy this parakeet more?
I could probably think of somebody.
Like a child, like a family, like somebody who would really, really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
What I suggest is you get a dog. It's going to be my canine day. Go find somebody who's going to love you because they think you're a hero.
Yeah.
You know? And I know I know you're not going to get rid of the parakeet. I know you're not going to do it. And I'm not saying you should get rid of the parakeet, but boy, would it free you.
Yeah, I'm actually, speaking of hoarding too, I'm right now actually getting rid of a lot of stuff. That's why I even put the radio on to have some stuff to listen to. I'm trying to get rid of a lot of old...
Go for it. Go for it. Time for a bonfire.
Yeah, exactly.
A bonfire of the vanities. Just take them all and put them away. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille. As we've learned, there's quite a lot to learn. Hey, if you want to hear more about this, you can go to thepositivemind.com. Maybe I'll put up a question, you know, what is your cognitive dissonance? How do you deal with yours? And we'll put that on the Facebook page with Tom's Goodwill. And maybe I'll get back some responses from you. We'll start a thread on that. I'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. It has been an absolute pleasure. My thanks to Linda Vanella for helping me with the research of this today. And I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m.